Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and we thank you for joining us on this fine Thursday morning. Now, in the studio with us, I'm excited because The Times Chief Stats Officer, Mr. Bill Edgar, is back. And down the line, we'll be hearing from the Chief Football Writer at The Times, Mr. Henry Winter. Later on, we'll also be hearing from Martin Ziegler about Arsene Wenger.
But we start with the title race, and Manchester City are top of the Premier League for the first time in 2 months after a 2-0 victory over Everton at Goodison Park. It is 5 wins out of 6 for the champions in 2019 as they go top on goal difference. Henry, you were there 7 days ago. Liverpool missed the chance to go 7 points clear of City. Psychologically then, how big a week has this been for Guardiola and City?
Well, it's been a huge week, but it won't surprise them because there is a resilience that comes from being champions. There's a determination that comes from, as they've been saying, looking around the dressing room and just seeing winners in there. And you just saw last night at Goodison, the goals, you know, end of each half, they scored. They keep going. Every second counts, injury time or other time. They seem to be doing Fergie time.
When we think back to the Liverpool game as well, Henry, City have shown they can grind out a result of late. How important is Fernandinho for that task?
Well, he's really important. I mean, you could see at Goodison the way that he was disrupting Everton moves. He eventually got booked, to the delight of the Goodison crowd, who'd been calling for about 60, 70 minutes, that Fernandinho was doing these little slide tackles, disrupting. And then he's got this ability to make the foul, which is probably just this side of a yellow card. Eventually he gets done almost on a sort of totting up process, which he did last night. But he has this ability to leave the scene of the crime just so easily. You see him there making the challenge, creating the foul, disrupting the move. And then within a second, so the referee's looking around, Fernandinho is in a different postcode. He's very, very clever like that. I think referees are beginning to realise, but look, every team needs a Fernandinho. And I think he's one of the most important players in the league, probably in Europe.
Well, City took their tally of goals this season to 114 in all competitions. That means they have scored 101 goals more than the bottom club Huddersfield. Bill, that's quite extraordinary.
It is, and Huddersfield slightly to blame for that, of course. Getting no goals in the cups, knocked out the first time, and they're on course for the worst goals per game in any league division in history. But, of course, Man City probably contributing more. And yes, time and again, they've hit five times this season already in all competitions, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's also... I mean, you mentioned Huddersfield going out of the cup competitions.
Yeah, oh, yes.
City also play in the Champions League.
City have played a lot more games.
To be clear on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they've played an extra game in the league. Huddersfield have a game in hand.
It could all change.
They could close the gap a little bit.
It could. In fact, I think Man City, 5 seasons ago in 2013-14, when they won the league, won the League Cup as well, good runs in the other competitions. They scored 155 goals that season, and they're now on 114, so they need 42 to beat that, and they've got, I think, a minimum 16 games left, probably between 20 and 25.
Well, next up for City is the visit of Chelsea on Sunday at the Etihad. Maurizio Sarri's men were the first team, of course, to beat City in the Premier League this season. Now, Gab, of course, they boast a front line of Higuain and Hazard. So what kind of game are you expecting?
Well, first, I wanted to go back to, because I don't think this was a great performance from City. Is this, I mean, we're going to talk about Liverpool later and how they've had a dip in performance, not just results, but is there a tiny dippy dip in in City as well.
I like a dippy dip.
Yeah, just a little tiny one, Bill.
I'm not sure there's too much. I thought they were on. They weren't great.
They're kind of like control, cruise control.
I think they're a bit unlucky. They didn't deserve to lose to Newcastle. I mean, they weren't great, but they certainly didn't deserve to lose. Last night, it wasn't their best performance, but a two-goal win was deserved, and I thought they were excellent against Arsenal. I don't think they're falling away too much, or if at all, in the past three or four games.
Is it a case that if Everton weren't so pants, they would have just raised their game if they had?
I really think the atmosphere was so strange last night that it was just flat, because Everton fans knew that if Man City won, it would hinder Liverpool's chances of winning the league. So for Everton, most Everton fans, that would be a good thing. It just seemed a bit half-hearted. I mean, if push came to shove, I presume all Everton fans, or most of them, wanted Everton to win, but their heart didn't seem in it. So when you know, a counter-attack started, Everton on the break, you'd expect a huge roar. It just wasn't there. It was quite strange. Now, whether that had an effect on the team, I don't know. The team was certainly trying as hard as possible.
Chelsea, by nature, under this manager, are a very proactive team. City are also a proactive team. I know that out there's the usual people going to be like, well, just, you know, like go and press Jorginho and then they're done. People have worked it out, you know, and play, you know, the usual idiocy that a lot of people say. I wonder if to some degree City are kind of pacing themselves, and that maybe in this game they sort of approach it as like, you know what, like, we don't need to go and take the game to the opposition. Let's let them press us high on the pitch a little more than perhaps we normally would. And then, you know, let's unleash Sané and Sterling and whatnot at the other end. I thought it was interesting that Aguero started last night, because I would have thought maybe you're keeping Aguero for Chelsea. But then I thought, you know what? Maybe you want Jesus's legs in there, because maybe there's a... Again, I'm not suggesting that Pep's going to go there and park the bus, because he doesn't do that. But maybe we'll see a slightly more conservative approach, since you know that Chelsea are going to try to press you high up the pitch. You also know that when Chelsea don't get their movements right on the press high up the pitch, that's when you've got, you know, people running at Jorginho and David Luiz in space, and that's when problems really, really arise. So I think that might be the blueprint that we see here. And I think also, if Pep does adopt that blueprint, it almost gives them the luxury in the League Cup final to play in a totally different way, because obviously these teams play each other again on the 24th of February at Wembley.
So, Bill, when we look back to the victory for Chelsea over City in December, that came with, what, less than 40% possession, with what Gab's saying, are you expecting something similar on Sunday?
Yeah, I guess as Gab said, Chelsea weren't deliberately set out to sit back, you wouldn't imagine, but Man City will set out to hog the ball as much as possible. There is a danger in pushing on to Edison, pushing forward and pressing on to Edison. A couple of times last night against Everton, Man City were just able to work the ball around the back, and after a few passes, the space opened up for a City player in midfield, pinged up to him, and immediately on a dangerous counter-attack. So you can see the reason why they do pass the ball around the back. It's not just for show, although I'm sure Edison does enjoy showing off a bit, but it can be very effective. They can have a dangerous attack within 10 seconds. I mean, Chelsea will take a lot of confidence from that victory over City in December. For me, I mean, I watched every City game. I think that's the only game they've deserved to lose this season in the league. So City will be worried. On the other hand, at home, they are, you know, one step up even more. And interestingly, Gab said City might sit back a little bit, wait to, you know, to pounce. But they've scored in the first half in every home game this season, in all domestic games. So it'll be interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised if they did it again.
And Henry, if we just touch upon Everton, they've conceded 19 goals from set pieces this season, the most in the Premier League. And Marco Silva said after the game that he didn't want to talk about it. How much do you sense he's feeling the pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I was listening in that press conference last night, and he said, listen, we've got to do something about it. They got slightly prickly about it, and understandably, because ultimately it's his responsibility, because he's got to drill all these players, like George Graham did with Arsenal, like all the good managers do. So either the players are not listening to him, they're not concentrating, or they just need stronger work on it. You know, it's not as if they've got a short back line there. You've got Michael Keane there, you've got Kurt Zouma in there as well. Pickford's normally a pretty commanding goalkeeper. So, it is a real concern, because actually, it was frustrating for Everton fans last night, because they played really well. I mean, they weren't getting too many shots on target, headers on target, to worry Edison. But there was a sort of bite in midfield. Tom Davis was good. Calvert-Lewin played up front in this 4-1-4-1 formation. And I actually think there was a bit of pride in the performance. And I think Everton fans went away saying, listen, we're playing against one of the best teams in Europe. It was always going to be difficult. And we didn't get embarrassed.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Now, every Thursday at thetimes.co.uk, our very own Bill Edgar provides 11 trivia teasers for you. And here is one for you on this podcast. The leading two Premier League goal scorers this season are African, Mo Salah of Liverpool and Egypt, and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Arsenal and Gabon. The top two scorers in the 2006-07 season were also both African. That was Chelsea's Didier Drogba. But who was the other one? Cap.
Was it Emmanuel Adebayor?
Ooh, that's a good shout. That's a very good shout.
Was it...
I can't even think. So long ago.
Well, you just think back. I mean...
So you have Ivory Coast. I'm trying to think of the other countries in Africa. Nigeria. Go on. Have you got it already?
No. I don't know, but... Everybody forgets him all the time. He's played for a bunch of English clubs. Totally overlooked. Played for Everton, too. Do you know who I'm going with this? Played for Portsmouth. Yakubu.
Not Yakubu.
Not Adebayor either.
Yeah, I know. He was just steely-faced. Always, yeah. I know. You built up to that and then no. Stick around until the end of the podcast. That's when we'll find out the answer.
Okay, so it's not Yakubu then. I still like my Adebayor show.
City had the chance to go top due to Liverpool's failure to beat West Ham on Monday night. It was a second draw in a row for Jurgen Klopp's men, who've won just two of their last five. Henry, if they fail to beat Bournemouth at Anfield on Saturday, does a wobble threaten to become a collapse?
Well, I mean, it's been a bad few weeks for them. The two draws on the spin and Manchester City picking up steam. And what Manchester City have, they've got the experience. They've been there before, whereas a lot of Liverpool players haven't won a title before, certainly not with the club, and the club haven't won it for 29 years. But like, you've got an experienced coach in Klopp, who's won, obviously, two titles in Germany. And I mean, the Manchester City fans, who were absolutely brilliant last night at Goodison, their support was total from before the first ball. I mean, any suggestion of Manchester City not being at it, you know, their fans certainly were, the players were, but by the end they were singing Jurgen's cracking up after his criticism of the referee at West Ham United the other night, Monday night. But I think Klopp's experience manager, I mean, just because we see all the sort of, you know, the emotional individual on the in the technical area bouncing around, he's a pretty, you know, there's ice in the veins, he's got a sports scientist, so look, I'm sure he'll calm things down. But I actually think it's also a time for Virgil van Dijk, the leaders in the dressing room, Jordan Henderson, who not everyone's crazy about, but I think he's really important individual in dressing, particularly at times like this. He's a quiet leader. So just to sort of calm things down a bit. But what Liverpool needs is Trent Alexander-Arnold back, because it's not just his ability as a right back. He gives them such attacking balance with Robertson on the left. He allows Salah to move more inside and play further up, because Alexander-Arnold is almost like a, you know, winger at times, the way he plays. So they need that pace, they need that energy, and they need to get him fit again.
Gab, to what extent do you think fatigue is a factor here with Liverpool?
Fatigue's a factor, injury's a factor, but like I said, Liverpool haven't played consistently well. You know, we remember games where they played really well, like the obviously the City game, which of course they lost. But they haven't, I think they really haven't played consistently well since earlier in the season. And you look back at these games, they were terrible against West Ham, I thought, and probably deserved to lose that game. Bill's nodding, so I know he's in agreement. The Leicester game, maybe a draw was a fair result in the end. The Brighton game, they won, but I also think it could have easily been a draw. The Palace game was a cluster mess. I mean, it was complete chaos. Palace were lucky, but then Liverpool, was it two or even three of their goals were deflected? This is not a good situation to be in. And on top of that, they have injuries. And it's not as if these performances are all down to injuries. I mean, people are saying, like, why did they let Nathaniel Clyne go? Well, they let Nathaniel Clyne go because they obviously needed to clear some salary. He probably wanted to play regularly. They figured that they didn't, you know, that Trent Alexander-Arnold would be back. Joe Gomez would be back. Fabinho's played right back before. Milner's, it's obviously his choice for right back. Not particularly impressive in the last couple of games. But they also have those injuries in midfield. And that, I think, is also a big issue, certainly in the last game, because Wijnaldum and probably Henderson as well, either one of those guys, I think we would have seen a different midfield.
What about, just as another factor as well, that they went on a warm weather training camp. They didn't play for 11 days. Does momentum have any issue to do with this as well? Gav, you're looking at me with a wry smile.
I think I'll leave it to Bill because he's a lot more metaphysical and not really into numbers and facts than I am. But I think momentum, motivation, this kind of stuff is the sort of stuff that people, when they can't explain things, that they rely on. I think it's kind of been proven there's no such thing as momentum. Now, there is a mindset. There could be more realistic reasons. Like, for example, if they went to their warm weather training and they had a whole bunch of very physically hard two-a-days with the intention of topping up their physical fitness for March, April and the stretch run and whatever, then that could be a factor. But they didn't look that much slower out there or less sharp. They just looked less good.
Yeah, I think it might be worth sort of revisiting the transfers. In the summer, everybody, lots of people said Liverpool have had a great summer. The signings look perfect and they're set for a title charge. Okay, they were right to say they have had a title challenge. While obviously Van Dijk has been great, signed last January, and you could say that wasn't that difficult because he proved himself in the Premier League. He was already just about the best centre-back in the Premier League at Southampton. And of course they had to pay a world record fee for a defender to get him. Alisson has done extremely well in goal, but Fabinho and Keita, there was this kind of assumption that they would inevitably do well. But you always have to be cautious when players are coming into a different league, and certainly they've struggled a bit. So when Henderson has been off and Wijnaldum off, and they've come in, it's really brought the team down quite a bit. Not least against West Ham when they were very poor. Letting Clyne go, yeah, certainly in retrospect that was a bad decision. I mean, he'd really fallen down the pecking order, and I remember 3 months ago thinking, what has happened to him? I know he's had a lot of injuries.
He was out for like a year.
Yeah, but
then he comes back, he plays a couple games badly, yeah. And then all of a sudden, because of the injury, all of a sudden it seems, you know, they make it seem
yeah.
as if
yeah, so, I mean,
they're just like George Besko, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he'd really kind of not, you know, he was almost a forgotten player, but if you count Gomez as being a backup to Alexander-Arnold, then that means that centre-back is vacant, you know. And, are you convinced Matip or Lovren are good enough to step in?
Lovren, who played in a World Cup final and a Champions League final in the space of a couple months, that Lovren?
Yeah, that Lovren, yeah. Okay. Yeah, but it's a team game, so... so, I don't know, I'm not so sure about him as a title-winning player being able to step in, but obviously he's very good, but, but overall, Liverpool haven't had too many injuries, but certainly...
They're out of the cups.
They're
not going to be fussed, I think, if they go out of the Champions League, which is entirely possible. Obviously, they're playing Bayern.
Yeah.
At that stage, you've got one game a week. I mean, surely the squad is big enough to have the bodies in there. Now, obviously, if City raise their game, you know, maybe you still don't become champions. But I don't know that you can really fault Liverpool for that.
It's a minor thing. I agree that only I can see them losing to Bayern. Man City will probably beat Schalke. City have got the League Cup final. They'll probably beat Newport in the FA Cup fifth round.
Not sure about that one.
Oh, you consistently play above themselves in the cup. I agree, especially at home. But so City are going to be playing a lot more games. So that will help Liverpool. I mean, it helped Liverpool in 2013-14 when they stayed the course for so long when I don't think they were in Europe that season, and they didn't go very far in the domestic cups either. So that's a big plus for Liverpool still.
And Henry, you mentioned it's been 29 years since their last title. There is more pressure on Liverpool, isn't there?
I mean, personally, I quite like seeing the title sort of rotated, you know, go round other people. It's more interesting from a narrative. I think it's better for the image of the Premier League if more teams win it. 29 years is a long time. I think the fans so far have been pretty patient. You don't get that sort of that nervy feeling that you can get. I think they've probably learnt, the club, if not necessarily all the individuals, because it was a different lot from, you know, the Gerrard slip season and, you know, we go again and all that stuff. I think they're keeping things a bit more in-house, all that sort of the possibility. And they really are the old cliche of taking it game by game.
Liverpool have a very difficult week coming up at the end of February. They go to Old Trafford, then they host Watford, then they go to Goodison for the Merseyside derby. Gav, that could be quite defining for them, couldn't it?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think we'll know a lot more, I think, after the United game. I was saying this when, you know, they'd won all those games in a row, that I don't think the performances were great. And I think it's frustrating for them when, you know, you've got key men out, and in a game like the one we saw the other night, Wijnaldum, I go back to him, and Henderson become key men for that midfield. It'll be pretty big how they react this weekend, because they're playing a team on paper that's incredibly up and down, as we saw, you know, whoop Chelsea, then get whooped yourself. But it is exactly the kind of sort of smallish mid-table team that of late has created problems for me. You know, that stat about how they hadn't dropped any points against teams outside the top six until they played Leicester. Yeah, but they put in a lot of bad performances, I thought, against teams outside the top six.
They deserve to lose to Huddersfield, don't forget, in the start of December, which is extraordinary, given how bad Huddersfield are.
So if you chuck in the games that they could have... Yeah, but that was his mate, Wags. Maybe he's doing it. But, look, but no, but if you chuck in, you know, if you chuck in games like that, right? Huddersfield, Palace, I think Brighton too, frankly. You know, I think there's a bit of a pattern emerging, and it'll be really interesting to see how Jurgen Klopp plays this.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
As Martin Ziegler reports in The Times this morning, Arsene Wenger could be set to return to football within the next month. Wenger's only involvement in football has been as a pundit since leaving Arsenal last May after 22 years in charge. Martin Ziegler joins us now, and Martin, he has a few offers on the table, doesn't he?
Yeah, so from what I understand, speaking to people close to him, he's got four concrete job offers. None of them from clubs with England. He doesn't feel it would be respectful to Arsenal to go to another Premier League club. So yes, this is abroad. We know one is a director of football job at Paris Saint-Germain, and one's a national team job, and the two others are also from two other club jobs. So I think feeling a bit, he got itchy feet. He's not enjoyed not being involved on a day-to-day basis. And from what I understand, he is going to be returning to football in some capacity within the next month.
Director of football role there, Gab. Does he fit that for you?
I mean, if you're going to redefine the role, and maybe in some ways, I think a big part of director of football is buying and selling and contracts and stuff like that. And while he was obviously heavily involved in that aspect at Arsenal, there were other people who ultimately did the numbers for him, right? His friend Dick Law and obviously Ivan Gazidis. And PSG already have a guy there in Ontario Henrique who, you know, they went out of their way to get and entrusted with a lot of responsibility. And I'm not saying it's not realistic. Wenger remains a very big name. PSG have certainly, you know, he has a flat in Paris, virtually like 5 minutes away from the Parc des Princes. PSG have shown a lot of interest in him in the past. They may, you know, just having him on board because he's such a popular figure in some quarters would help the club. But, I mean, from there to say that, you know, he could say yes and walk into those jobs tomorrow, I don't think we're quite there yet.
Speaking to people close to him, it, what he really liked is actually the day-to-day involvement with players. He liked being out on the training pitch. He liked planning tactics. So I'm not quite sure that's a great fit for him. I mean, I think some people are trying to persuade him that he needs to take a step back from the hurly-burly of club management. And actually, it might, you know, he should consider this as a way of being involved in the game without the sort of pressures and the low job security of club management.
Just wondering about a possible national team that Wenger might join or might get offers from. The African Cup of Nations is this summer, 24 teams in it. They've not even finished the qualification yet, but I imagine you might not mind that, say, as work on it for a nation for 5 months and then in the new season join a club. Certainly French are very popular. I think there are 9 French managers of African nations at the moment, so you know, he fits the bill in that sense. So
I wouldn't rule it out. I think it's something he's a challenge he's never had, so maybe he thinks this is something he could try. Perhaps I know he was heavily linked with the Qatar national team. They've just won the Asia Cup, so I wouldn't imagine they're in any particular hurry to change their coach at the moment. I think it's certainly a possibility.
So, Gab, where do you think he will land? Will it be club or international management?
I have no idea. I'm not sure he's necessarily... I think he's such a football guy, such a sort of day-in, day-out routine thing that he might personally struggle or find the transition to international management a little bit more difficult. I know certainly having spoken to other people who've kind of done both, you know, you find yourself sort of, okay, so you go to watch the game at the weekend, but then you can't do anything about it. And then, you know, on Monday, you watch videos. Tuesdays, you have meetings. Wednesday, you sit around and you're literally like, okay, what do I do now? You know, like, it's a very different experience. But then in other ways, when it comes to working with what he has available to him, Wenger would probably be a better fit or be a good fit as a national team manager. I don't know. I thought I would miss him more, to be perfectly honest.
Oh.
Maybe it's because I find what he's doing very interesting, and the challenges that Rossignol he faces, you know, Sven Mislintat, you know, escaping from the club with his sandals and his hair, and Gazidis, of course, leaving the club before that. You know, I find that Arsenal storyline really, really compelling and interesting, whereas with Wenger, it was an interesting storyline, but it was the same storyline for a decade.
Well, Martin suggests in the article that Wenger is finding life out of work difficult. Henry, he is a true football obsessive, isn't he?
I mean, just having been at an event with Wenger the other day, a couple of months ago, when he got an LMA award, he stood up on stage and he said, listen, I miss the training ground. So, look, he loves it. Football is his life. You know, he's got great pride in his daughter who's going on to become a vet, but his passion is football. I can remember when it was his 60th birthday and there was a press conference at London Colney and about 5 or 6 of us talked to him in the end and said, come on, Arsenal, how are you going to go and celebrate? You know, you're going to the West End, you're going to the museum, you're going to the theatre, you're going to the opera, what are you going to do? And he said, no, I'll stay at home because there's a quite important Bundesliga second division game going on in Germany. And I said, oh, come on, Arsenal, you've got to go. And, you know, you can't be that obsessed with football. You know, it's a big birthday, take the night off. He said, no, I must watch this game, it's very important. But for you, to keep you happy, I'll put some candles on top of the television.
Hi there and welcome to The Sweeper, the Times' fantasy football tip service. We're into game week 26, not long to go. I'm Charlie Scott, joined by Paddy Von Bear, and yeah, we're here to preview this game week. Coming off the back of a double game week that was good for some City players, not so good for others, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a very productive weekend for Sergio Aguero and all his captainers. He was not quite the same in midweek. Could have got a massive score, but no luck there. And the reverse was true for Aymeric Laporte, who showed up in a big way against Everton, goal assist. I think Laporte got 20 points and Aguero 19, so if you had one of them as captain, you were pretty much in a good position.
And if you had Leroy Sané, our condolences.
Yeah, 1 point, 59 minutes. I didn't do much better, actually, with De Bruyne as captain, considering he actually played very well on the weekend and then was cruelly denied a late assist in midweek, but I'm obviously not bitter.
I know De Bruyne even took to Twitter to tweet at the Fantasy Premier League Twitter account with a confused emoji after they didn't give the assist for Gabriel Jesus' goal to him.
Quite right, too.
So, yeah, looking ahead to game 26, who's got good games in the next few weeks, do you think? I mean, Arsenal look good to me. Beyond Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who would you consider getting in?
I don't know. It's always tough with Arsenal. You don't really trust their defence, do you? So maybe a defender with some attacking ability. Kolasinac has been useful. Does Monreal's return threaten his position? Always a tricky one. If I were to go Arsenal, I think I would play it safe, go for Aubameyang. And if I had Aguero, I'd probably sell him.
Yeah, okay. And I like the look of Wolves. We all love Wolves, don't we? I mean, their defence is good. Doherty and Johnny are just brilliant from wing-back. Jimenez is getting the goals and Diego Jota finally is fulfilling that promise that we all thought he was going to do in pre-season. Their games have got Newcastle, Bournemouth, Huddersfield and Cardiff, so they could run riot, I think.
Bargains everywhere. Doherty managed to get a brace in the cup in the week as well. He is truly the new Marcus Alonso.
There is no stopping him. So speaking of Marcus Alonso, Chelsea, meanwhile, I think, avoid.
Yeah, they're one of four teams that have a blank coming up next week. In the meantime, they play Man City. City also have a blank, and obviously with those playing each other, it wouldn't be a bad time to start selling the expensive players from those teams. Not wholesale, but make sure you don't have too many blankers coming up, because that's going to come back to bite you next week.
Eden Hazard, do you think?
Yeah, he can go. I think despite his efforts against Huddersfield, he made it slightly difficult with that performance, playing well with Higuain, but I think you can sell and buy back at the same price, so no problems.
Quick quiz, who are the top two most informed players in Fantasy Premier League?
Ooh, how big was this week? Laporte?
Nope.
No. Maybe Jota?
Second.
Ooh. And Jimenez?
No.
Where am I looking?
Down south.
Down south, Southampton, Ward-Prowse?
Yes.
Oh, is he really? He's been playing so well.
He has. I mean, yeah. Hasenhüttl's working wonders, but I mean, they've got a tough front, so that's not me suggesting you should get James Ward-Prowse, but it's interesting nonetheless. Don't forget that you can sign up for The Sweeper, which is our weekly email at thetimes.co.uk/fantasyfootball, or you can join the Facebook group. Just search for The Sweeper on Facebook and we will approve you as a member, and you can chuck questions or your teams, ask for our tips, and we will get back to you.
Good luck.
It is time now for our weekly predictions game, where last week, Gab, you were victorious, so you reduced the deficit to 12-7 in my favour this season.
You're not giving me the bonuses for getting...
There are no bonuses, no.
All right. That's fine. I don't need the bonuses. That's fine.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see how you get on this week then. Let's start with the game at Selhurst Park. Crystal Palace taking on West Ham.
Ooh. Palace now with that mighty front line, Townsend, Zaha, who, by the way, did you know Wilfried Zaha nearly went to China?
No. Tell us more.
No, he was just offered a ton of money, so I'm told. And he opted to stay put because of his love of Palace. No, I think probably because, you know, he wants to play in the Premier League and not in China. West Ham coming off that result, but still missing a number of players. I'm not 100% sure about them coming back. It's a tough one. I'm going to go for a Palace victory, though. 1-0.
Oh, okay. I actually think West Ham could get something out of it, but I'm going to go for a draw. 1-1.
Brighton and Burnley at 5:30 on Saturday. Bet you're pumped, hyped and amped for this one after watching Brighton last night.
Well, one thing I will say is Chris Hughton made 10 changes for that FA Cup game at West Brom. So hopefully the changes he makes for this Premier League game will do a lot better.
Try if I jump in there.
Please do.
Championship expert.
Oh, don't say that.
Okay, so Hughton makes 10 changes.
Yep.
Aren't West Brom really good and doing really well?
They are, yeah. They're fourth, I think, in the Championship. So but he also made about seven changes.
He also made a whole lot of chances, more. Right? Yeah. So we shouldn't read anything into this result.
No, not really.
There's still some massive gulf between the Premier League and the Championship.
No, okay. Definitely not. And Glenn Murray was brought on for Brighton. Dwight Gayle never came on. He was on the bench, but never came on. So maybe Darren Moore just decided that this wasn't for them.
Have him rest up for this weekend's match against Rotherham or Bolton, somebody equally talented.
Indeed. As it is the 5:30 game at the Amex, Brighton against Burnley. I don't know why, but I just have a feeling there could be goals in this one. So I've gone for a 2-2 draw. Don't know why. That's what I'm plumping for.
I'll go for Brighton to win because I like Chris Hughton. He's a nice, calm man. And I'm going to go 2-0.
Okay. We've been speaking about the game on Sunday at the Etihad. Manchester City against Chelsea. You go first, Gab.
The momentum's all with City, obviously, and they need the points. But I don't know. This is such a huge test, I think, for Chelsea. And, you know, they did it against Huddersfield. Can they do it against the team at the other end of the table? I'm going to say yes. And I'm going to say 1-1.
Ooh, okay. Well, I think City will win this one, but I do think Chelsea will score. I'm plumping for a 2-1 win for Pep's men.
Sheffield Wednesday, which is the first match in charge for Steve Bruce after his time off being appointed in early January.
At home.
Or he's already had an away game.
They won at Ipswich.
Wow, the excitement. Aren't Ipswich really, really bad?
Yeah, they're bottom.
Okay.
Yeah.
So somebody against Reading, who are also near the bottom, although I've been reliably informed that because Ipswich are basically a League One club already, and Bolton are imploding under the weight of Dean Holdsworth and the people came after, and there's all sorts of strife there, and Rotherham are small and difficult to find on a map, that Reading are going to stay up. Is that true? Is it basically a dead cert that those three are going down?
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, obviously, Rotherham are just outside the relegation zone. It is Ipswich.
So they're ahead of Reading, Rotherham.
Yes, by a point. It is Ipswich, Bolton and Reading in the bottom three. I mean, Reading have had a torrid time, haven't they? It's not been good.
The new manager's not lifted them?
Not really.
Should they bring Paul Clement back?
Were they too quick to get rid of Paul Clement? Who knows?
So, where Sheffield went, they're just sort of in irrelevant mid-table oblivion,
mid-table,
right?
Mid-table obscurity.
Okay. So it seems like a good place for Steve Bruce to go and maybe build something. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go for the draw, 0-0.
Are you? Well, I think first home game for Steve Bruce. I think they'll be pumped and raring to go. I'm going for a 1-0 win, though. Finally, then, the Madrid derby. Ooh.
Atleti against Real Madrid. This is a huge period for Real Madrid. Obviously, they played Barcelona in the Copa del Rey in midweek. They're playing them again, and then they have the League Classic. I think they play them like three times in February. Atletico are so Griezmann dependent right now. It's not even funny. They had a chance at the weekend to go and gain points against Barcelona. Really expected them to, but They were just terrible. It's like nobody does anything other than Griezmann going forward. You feel like it's kind of the end of Cholismo. Karim Benzema scoring goals for Real Madrid again, which people assume it would happen. I think this is one of those games, though, where Atletico, I just have a feeling that they go and they just sit deep, grind you down. Oblak makes a bunch of saves. And whether it's Griezmann or a set piece, Atleti nicks a goal and win 1-0.
Well, Atletico Madrid have a great record at home. They haven't lost. They've won 9 of their 11 games at home. All their defeats have come away from home, only 2. So they've done pretty well in the league. They are second. Real Madrid behind them, 2 points behind them in third. I think this is a tough one to call. I actually am going to go for a 1-1 draw. So it is just time for us to give you the answer to Bill Edgar's trivia teaser. We asked, the leading two Premier League goalscorers this season are African. Mo Salah of Liverpool and Egypt and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang of Arsenal and Gabon. Now, the top two scorers in the 2006-07 season were also both African. Chelsea's Didier Drogba was one, but who was the other?
Now, I had guessed.
You did. You rattled off a few names. But Adebayor was the one you really were plumping for.
That's right.
I'm guessing it wasn't, because I Bill just didn't. There was no reaction
Bill
whatsoever.
So unflappable. It's so difficult.
Poker face.
Yeah, I had Adebayor and Yakubu.
Those are my guys.
Should we ask for a clue?
They told us it's not Yakubu, yes.
Okay,
is it somebody taller than Adebayor?
I would think he's shorter, 2 or 3 inches shorter than Adebayor, I think.
Yeah, that really narrows it down. 99.9%
You asked the question.
You haven't mentioned his name yet. He was playing for Blackburn. There's one clue.
Well, but Yakubu played for Blackburn.
We haven't mentioned him. Okay, so Blackburn.
And he's from Cape Town.
South Africa.
Oh, Benny
Mac! Yes!
Correct.
Benny McCarthy. That's a good one. Well done, Bill. That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Bill Edgar, Martin Ziegler and Henry Winter.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times as well. If you do that, you'll enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. Search The Times subscription for more information. If you put it in quotes, Natalie, that might be a good idea when Googling. Did you know that? That if you put it in quotes, you get the actual term rather than the individual ones.
Oh, I see. Yes, okay.
Yes, that search engine knowledge.
So it'll be quicker if you do that.
Exactly.
Fabulous. And we're going to be back on Monday. And guess what's back?
The champions!
The Champions League.
I love it. Here we go. Knockouts.
Yeah. This is where it gets interesting. So we'll be back then.
Fired up.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on The Times radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.